What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Daily Dose with Sky, formerly known as the Toasty Podcast. I want to talk to you guys a little bit about money and happiness today. Very simple, money and happiness. So let's get into that. And we've got a little bit more to talk about. Meanwhile, tornado warning in Fort Worth, and I am doing this podcast for you. So let's get after it.
I thought one of the best points it made was that, like, the next phase of capitalism doesn't need to be adding in socialist policies.
Against the grain!
This is for us. This is for the boys.
Oh, yeah, what is your medical background?
I got that. You got that new gene edit?
Just CRISPR me up, bro.
Give me some sugar, baby.
This is for the fly guys.
This is a complete disaster. All right, guys, so let's get into it. That intro that you just heard is from another podcast that I do called Against the Grain. I just wanted you guys to listen to that just so you know. It was a little bit of a plug, a little shameless plug for that. If you guys want to listen to that, you can. It's me and three other dudes that talk about controversial topics, things like that, of course, and we get into it pretty deep. Soon to have a segment with ladies as well. We'll see how that goes because I know some of you guys don't like the bro-y style podcasts. Completely understandable. So I want to try to fix that for you guys. Anyway, on this podcast, I talk about everything that I want to talk about, pretty much, plain and simple. And it is, you know, what's going on in Fort Worth and Texas and the world. Sorry, I got to fix this noise gate situation that I have going on here. I want to make sure that it can actually hear me, make sure the range is good, basically so that it actually catches my voice whenever I talk every single time. That's the goal of the noise gate. Anyway, money and happiness. So there was a few studies done on this, and I talked about it on a recent podcast brought to you by Adamo from Against the Grain. You know, I think the common knowledge or the common, maybe it's a misconception. Common misconception is that the more money you make, the happier you'll be. I don't think that's actually the case. I don't think that's how that works. If you guys hear a storm in the background, I apologize. It is happening right outside. There's a tornado warning, so if I just get up and stop, just one of those things, you know, gotta protect myself. It sounds weird for sure, but anyway, let me go see if my window's open. I'll be back in a second. And we're back. Let's get into this. So there was a study done on this. PNAS did this study, and it is 33,000 people they did this study on, or not study on, they got information from, and it has to do with money and happiness, you know, and they published this a chart that was pretty decent, and essentially, I'll put this stuff in the show notes, of course, so you guys can see it, but what it really shows, the data shows that more money only equals more happiness to a certain point. You know, at some point it does stop, it does subside, and you don't get happier. And they especially notice this in the case of someone that is already unhappy. So, you know, the guy at work that you work with, wow, of course you work with him, he's at work. Anyway, your coworker, he or she just always down on their luck type of person, always in a negative attitude, always puts a negative spin on everything, and always looks at the glass half empty instead of half full. That is the guy we're talking about. That is the person we're talking about here. They're not going to view more money as more happiness, even though they think they will. They're going to look at it. They're going to have some kind of negative spin to put on it almost always. And so you can't really just fix that, you know? It's not something you can fix. But what I want to ask you guys is, where does your happiness come from? I think that's the bottom line here. Money, sure. Money does help my happiness out. 100%. You know, if I make more money, awesome. But I'm in the middle class zone. So it's not like I'm making freaking hundreds of thousands of dollars here. Not me. Not I, said Sky. But I am making enough money to live on and buy things with, extra things that I might want, or have extra curricular activities with that money that I have. You know, I hang out with people and all that stuff, right? I'm not trying to tell you my life's great. I'm just saying that I have the basics covered, in my opinion, in a well-rounded life. The things that actually produce the happiness See, I think that the money part of it is kind of like a cherry on top, because I've definitely been in a place where I haven't had money. I didn't grow up with money, of course. And then, you know, whenever I start new businesses or new ventures, well, you don't have money then either. And I've started a lot of those. So I'm constantly in this state, even though I've definitely found my niche, I think. Anyway, all that to say, my happiness really comes from my spirituality, the gym, you know, exercise. So kind of going along the lines of taking care of my body, and then your diet, you know, because that can affect your mood substantially. And in my opinion, it is one of the pillars for sure, you know. Granted, you know, in our latest podcast, Against the Grain, Adamo actually pointed this out. He said, well, to your point, you know, also spirituality is the most important thing, because you can see someone that doesn't have anything but has spirituality and they're happy. Think, you know, Buddhist monk or something, right? They live in the same place forever. They live within their means, essentially. They don't have a lot, I would say. Never been to one of their facilities, so to speak. But I am assuming by the way they live in one place all the time. They don't get a bunch of extra stuff. They don't live in the materialistic mindset. And here they are, always joyful, always content, so to speak. And it has nothing to do with money, does it? See, so, you know, I think there's a lot of ways around this, sure. But what this is interesting is that it even is showing that let me rephrase. The reason this chart is interesting and the study is interesting is because it does kind of throw off the whole money can't buy happiness. Because to an extent, what this is showing is that it can, up to about $60,000 to $90,000. In that range, you do get more happy. So when you make over $60,000, instantly your happiness can go up twofold. And then when you make over up to $90,000, that's kind of where it dies down and stops going up so much in the grand scheme of things. The interesting thing here is that even whenever you, like, let's say you have a headache or something like that, they actually asked people this, right? People that had a headache on this app that they were tracking on their phone where they would input what they're feeling all the time, if they had a headache, their happiness went down as much as it would if their income was four folds down. Does it make sense? It's hard to explain. So like, if their income went up fourfold, so four times what they made, that amount of difference it made in their happiness was the same as having a headache. And what this tells us is that, well then yeah, it does definitely affect your happiness. Money does definitely affect your happiness. But on the flip side, if I asked you, would you rather have $1 million right now or have $1 million right now, but you have to have a headache for the rest of your life? You probably wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I don't want a freaking headache. Headaches freaking suck, obviously. So, guys, this episode is brought to you by Stash. Stash Enterprises, LLC, only because I'm wearing the t-shirt. So I've been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. This is actually a company that I do some work for comms equipment and headsets in the emergency services division. Probably doesn't really matter to you, but whatever. Sponsor of this episode. Moving on. So Time Magazine does a little piece on this, and then so does Washington Post. Can money buy happiness? Scientists say it can. That's the headline. It's a question that philosophers, economists, and social scientists have grappled with for decades. Can money actually buy happiness for most people in the United States? The answer is seemingly yes. Well, because the United States lives in a capitalist, materialistic society, I would say, and it's very big for them. What I was saying on the podcast Against the Grain, look, I buy some things and I have a lot of stuff. So it might look from the outside in like I'm a materialistic person, but the truth is, like, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. Like, I buy this stuff because, like, yeah, sure, I want to use it. I have some fun with it. They're toys or whatever. But if all this stuff burned down, I can honestly say I would be okay. I would be just fine because I've been there before, right? It's not like I've never had nothing. So I would just build up from the ground up again. You know? You got to keep moving forward. You know, you can't always say, I regret this or that. Two prominent researchers, Daniel Kahneman and Matthew Killingsworth, came to this conclusion in a joint study published this month in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, overturning the dominant thinking that people are generally happier as they earn more, with their joy leveling out when their income hits about $75,000. This threshold was initially positioned by Kahneman, a Nobel Prize-winning economist and psychologist, in a 2010 study. But there is no further progress. Yeah. But in 2021, Killingsworth, a happiness researcher and senior fellow at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, found that happiness does not plateau at $75,000 and that experienced well-being can continue to rise with income well above $200,000. The issue with that statement is that they also didn't have a lot of people in this study that were above like the $480,000 a year mark as far as income is concerned. The other thing I want to add to this is that it does not include investing, investments, I would imagine. It includes income. This is just income, right? So in their study, Kahneman and Killingsworth surveyed 33,391 adults aged between 18 and 65 who live in the United States, are employed, and report at least $10,000 a year as their income. The authors said that they lacked substantial data for those earning over $500,000. See, so $480,000 was the mark on the chart. $500,000, what they're saying in this article. To measure their happiness, participants were asked to report on their feelings at random intervals of the day via a smartphone app developed by Killingsworth called Track Your Happiness. In an email that the data came from repeatedly pinging people at randomly timed moments during the daily life, and they would tell them how they're feeling. Specifically, they were asked, how do you feel right now, on a scale ranging from very bad to very good, he said. It's very simple, very simple. So it is a self-reported study, but when you have 33,391 people giving info to a study that they willingly said, I will do this study, they're probably not going to lie, I would imagine. Maybe there is some leeway for that. There's probably some error in this study as well, but 33,000 people is actually a lot more than a lot of like political poll studies. Polling data a lot of times does not come from 33,000 people. A lot of times they can get polling data from like 2,100 people, and that's actually considered relevant information at that point. And you can actually submit a paper on that above, I think it is 2,100 people is an actual official quote unquote study number, if you will. You can fact check me, but it's around there. It's roughly around there. Anyway, but the study also found that there was an unhappy minority, about 20% of the participants, whose unhappiness diminishes with rising income up to the threshold, then shows no further progress. What I'd like to know is how they tracked these ranges of income, and how did they know that people's income would rise? You know what I mean? Like, my income stayed relatively the same because of the things I choose to do for about 3 or so years, while some others might be like on a 5-year streak to have double their income. If you're in a normal career and you actually work the ladder, then you're going to make more money than you did, and I get that, but not everyone does that. Exhibit A is me. These people tend to experience negative miseries that typically cannot be alleviated by earning more money. The report cites examples such as heartbreak, bereavement, or clinical depression. For them, their suffering may diminish as their income rises to about $100,000, but very little beyond that. In the simplest terms, this suggests that for most people, larger incomes are associated with greater happiness. The exception is people who are financially well off but unhappy. For instance, if you're rich and miserable, more money won't help. For everyone else, more money was associated with higher happiness to somewhat varying degrees. See, there you go. So if you already have money and you get more money, not a big deal. You're used to having money, essentially. So back to my story, I didn't have anything and now I have stuff. And if I had nothing again, I'd be okay. The opposite is true for, say, someone that grew up very well off and not poor at all. They won't be used to having nothing. So when they do have nothing, if that ever did happen to them, they'd be absolutely screwed. But if they make more money, it also doesn't really do anything to them because they've already been living a nice cush lifestyle. That is what you might call spoon fed. And that's where the term comes from, because we know their ideas about life aren't the same as, say, someone else that had to actually work and make it through difficult times. That is all I got for you guys today on money and happiness. I'm going to give you guys a couple of tips right quick that I got from ChatGPT. It's not really, I mean, it is ChatGPT, but also it's like things that I might have also noticed or things that we already know. Sorry, I was focused on this. Let me get into ChatGPT real quick and we'll be good. All right, ChatGPT is not going to work. Did I record it? Dang, dude. I don't think I did. All right, let's just get over this. Let's talk about this recent SVB thing. I'm not going to get in depth with it because I'm not the guy. I'm not a finance guy, but I just want to talk about it real quick and tell you what the latest news on it. Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, she actually told Congress today that the banking system is sound for the Americans. Americans can feel confident about their deposits because the banking system's okay. I think that's just press. I don't really know if that's true or not. A lot of times these people in these positions are told to do that, obviously, so we feel good about it. She said, we certainly need to analyze carefully what happened to trigger these bank failures and examine our rules and supervision to prevent failures from happening again. That's what Janet told the committee and Congress people that were there at this time. I do believe their plan. I think they followed through with it. I'm not positive. Jeff Jackson was talking about this actually on By All. What's funny is, of all places, he was talking about this on TikTok, but he has a TikTok. He's a congressman from North Carolina, and he was talking about how they got together on a Zoom meeting, over 200 Congress people, just to talk about what happened at the bank and what they were going to do moving forward. And I believe they took it from federally insured funds. They took money out and they paid all the depositors, or I believe they're going through with that. They're going to pay the depositors, not the stockholders or the executives of the bank, which is nice. That's a nice thought, because in 2008, what happened with the banking crisis after the housing crisis, like right one after the other, they bailed out the bank. The big banks, and that meant they actually paid for all the executives' paychecks for the bank, as well as some depositors and things like that. But a lot of people actually lost everything, and they didn't get paid off because they didn't work for the bank or they didn't have deposits in the bank. So a lot of mishaps there. There's some arguments on whether they did the right thing there or not. Hindsight's 20/20. You know, in my opinion, the government always makes the wrong decision, and that's just kind of how that works. They are always going to make the wrong decision because 2 weeks later, there will always be a better option they could have used. Hindsight's 20/20. But anyway, this was mostly this hearing today at for the Treasurer, Secretary, Treasurer, whatever. Anyway, this was supposed to address the budget proposal for Joe Biden's budget proposal. But look, man, we are talking about handing more money out. And like my thing with this is if we hand $44 billion plus to Ukraine, another country that is just going through it right now, there should be no reason that we can't help out. I don't know, what is it, a few billion? I don't know how much money it actually was for SVB. But there's not, I know it wasn't 44 billion. I know it wasn't that. If we can't do that too, I don't know what we're doing. I mean, I think they're both a problem. Obviously, I think they're both concerning. We shouldn't have done the Ukraine thing in the first place, of course, because it's printing money. But that's the argument is, yeah, why can't we help our own American people in this case if we helped Ukraine for $44 billion? Of course, that's a great argument. The other argument is, why do we need to help anybody at all as far as government money goes, printing money? But that would be more of an anarchist, free market, capitalist thought idea. So I don't really hold that to be true. It's just another point to be made, I guess. So that's about it on the SVB thing. That's all I really want to say. Like I said, updates are, I think they're going to pay the depositors and they're not going to pay executives or stockholders. Simple as that. Pretty easy. So it's been fun. It's been real. And this is the Daily Dose with Sky, and I don't really get into it a lot, but I just wanted to talk about this real quick, and that is it. That is all. If you guys want to see me on other podcasts, I am on Daily. I'm on this one. I was about to say the name again. Like an idiot. I am on this podcast, obviously, and I'm also on Against the Grain. I'm their moderator, so to speak, even though I'm not like really that good at it. I'm getting better, so we'll see. I want to have guests on this show as well. I'm going to start doing that more and more. You know, I remember the Toasty podcast was amazing, and I loved it. I loved talking to people. That's the whole reason I do this. I don't really like doing podcasts by myself. They're not that fun, And Exhibit A is I don't really get that excited about it. Like, I'm just kind of here, you know? I will catch you guys next time. And stay toasty. Toasty.